Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Well, if you've been listening today, I want to think you've sort of at least, if not our, my, heard our, or my, like, a little bit of, not, for now I'll say frustration about the cook topic. Because it doesn't feel right to sit here and continue along like he's absent, talking about his value and this negotiation that may or may not be actually happening, like whatever it really is. There has to be some guesswork in it because we're not in the room. It doesn't feel like, I think I'm getting sort of blocked in my brain because he is here and the conversation seems almost predicated on his not showing up today. It sort of ignores the fact. Do these guys know that he actually was there today as they're talking about, didn't one of them just say, well, he could still hold out in the summer? Like, what does that sound like today, right? So I don't really want to do that, but we walked into it about a half an hour ago where I felt like, okay, because I do think his future through a contract is still as relevant as it was yesterday. He just didn't skip mandatory minicamp like we mostly thought he would. And that gets you to sort of a discussion that isn't seemingly to me isn't really worth having, which is like sort of the what kind of move it is to skip mandatory minicamp. Like is it even a big move? Other guys have done it. TJ Watt's a pretty big deal. Like he's not at this for the Steelers today, but I'm not sure what it has to mean.
I feel like it is almost entirely symbolic, which is why when we talked about it yesterday, like how are you prepared to feel if he doesn't show up, which again is what the betting money was on, him not being there for this. But of course, now we learn today that he obviously is and said as much that he intends to report to training camp too. It's really would just be the opportunity to, you know, get your, you know, you're included with the other guys who are unhappy with their contracts. And so, you know, national shows or even shows like ours in other markets that are talking about the stuff that's going on in the NFL, as we talk about these other teams, and we'll talk about Trey Hendrickson and DJ Watt and Terry McLaurin. James Cook would have been a part of that. But what kind of pressure would any of that put on the Bills? None. The pressure that the Bills would feel comes when and if he's not prepared to play games for them or get ready to play games for them. That's where the pressure is. And, you know, again, him being there now in and of itself symbolically does not rule out him taking a stand at a later date, but it would be pretty surprising. Like the order of things here would be just kind of messed up from how at least I perceive it to usually go. Guy unhappy about a contract, first opportunity to make the team, you know, supposedly, like at least let everyone know you're upset, is not showing up to the first mandatory thing. Well, he did that and he participated. And he also told us the reason the training camp thing, you know, the only question there is going to be whether he is a hold-in. Not whether he's a holdout. I think he told you today, I'm coming. Like, he'll report on time. But whether he participates is still, I think he left it maybe intentionally somewhat vague. But it feels to me very much like the story has shifted. Like I think I said, I don't know if this is exactly what you're alluding to, but like a half an hour ago, the story shifts now to should you invest in him for the next 3 years? Say, or 3 years after this rookie deal is up, right? Are they being smart here, or are they being, you know, foolish, not respecting what he does for them, and potentially allowing, they're walking him right up to free agency, basically, is what they're doing, without a contract extension. And to that I say, fine. If this were the most important wide receiver on the team, I think we would, a lot of us, me included, definitely would feel differently about it.
Well, who is that, by the way, since you brought that up?
Who is that?
Right. Who is the most important wide receiver on the team? I want to know so I can ask myself that question.
Well, it's Shakir, I think. And if he hadn't gotten a contract extension, that would be a story. Because receivers do get top, and he didn't even get a top of market contract, but he got a going rate for a player of his caliber contract extension. And that matters more. Having that solidified matters more, way more to me, and I think to the Bills. By their actions so far, I think it's fair to say this, and we'll see what happens down the road, because they're not forbidden from getting something done with Cook even between now and training camp, or even next offseason, if they so choose. But they're basically taking him by the hand and walking him to free agency. If they don't get something done.
If, right. I mean, we're not there yet, but if. Yeah, what it says about their feelings about Shakir is, if nothing else, that he was more agreeable to what they thought his value was. It may not be any more than that. We don't know how far apart the Bills and Cook are, but enough for it to sound like it had earlier in the spring. Like, we'll just put this off. Is he more valuable to them than Cook? Because that, was that 15?
Yeah, that's right. It's really kind of funny, right at the number that Cook has been looking for, reportedly.
It's good that I have this job, because if I can I say that? I'm sure somebody in their car is like, are we sure it's good that you have this job? But I'm just so weirdly tied up all the time about their players in this incarnation of the Bills. Not all the time, but I think of Shakir in kind of the same way I think of Cook, which is like, sure, he's good. Keep him. Okay. And I don't say any of that to be sarcastic. Like, I think he's good. I think his role in the offense blocks what I think might be a more optimal offense, whether that's Kincaid there or whether that's Coleman there. You know, maybe that could be Elijah Moore. Maybe that could be Samuel. Like, he is your slot receiver. And that's it. Like, Shakir has sort of locked that up. I mean, he doesn't play every snap. What is he? He comes out, you know.
If they're not he in doesn't three, play every, he took, was it zero snaps with less than two or less receivers? Like, if they go to two receivers, he's not one of them.
I want to say, was that Rich Rebar? I want to say it was 25.
20, okay.
I wrote that down on the back of one. Yeah. Here it is.
Oh, point, yeah.
Here it is. Yeah. On a back page, because we're on our way back, everybody.
On the page behind something from 6 years ago. Great. Good method.
I'll tell you what was on the other side of this page.
I don't even care, let alone the people out there. What do you got?
Last year, with two receivers or less on the field, Shakir ran 25 routes.
Okay.
So, there.
Not a lot of frequency there. But still,
I have to say, I'm sorry. On the other side of this page is a sentence that reads as follows. The Cook thing is more symbolism to me.
That's it? You wasted a whole page on that?
No, it's one line.
Oh, okay, I see.
But literally, you just said that.
Really?
I just wrote it down. You just said it. It's symbolic.
Oh, okay.
Going to minicamp or not going to minicamp is symbolic.
Right, okay.
And here, six years ago, I doubt it. Here on this other side of the same piece of paper, the Cook thing is more symbolism to me. Then there are some picks.
This is some sort of AI notebook you got going there. It's like reading my thoughts or maybe something. I don't even know.
Maybe. Here's one about ice cream.
I 100% support them extending Shakir. Your leading pass catcher, albeit in an already exhaustive everybody eats model, matters way more than your running back. Just does. So get that done. It is interesting that it's at the dollar figure, which is not, it's like mid-market for receivers, top of the market for running backs. I mean, it says a lot. That disparity tells you a lot about how the position is viewed and valued within the league, which is, of course, like the foundation of this entire conversation. So, yeah, of course they paid Shakir. I don't want to say of course they're not paying Cook, because maybe they still will. But I have thought all along that their model would be, okay, yeah, we'd like to do something, but not at that number, and you go fly be free. We'll replace you. Thanks for coming.
Is anybody listening, even though it's been a minute, thinking about Cook versus Shakir, like in terms of value right now as you're talking? Is anybody else thinking about that? I am thinking about that. I don't know what I want to do with it. I mean, like Cook being a running back, is it even worth comparing them?
Yeah,
Cook, like running back guy, as long as he's not like the biggest Shakir fan, probably, running back guy would be incredulous to that take. Cook, 18 touchdowns. Shakir, 4. Like, is Shakir giving you these big plays that Cook does? Is he giving you, what is he giving you? Like, he's fine. You know, it's a few catches for 60, 70 yards. Like, what is he giving you? Running Cook guy, the guy who called in at the 3 o'clock hour mm-hmm. on Cook, who compared, almost got to compare him to Barkley.
The best guys in the league, yeah.
Like, you want to, what does he say if you tell him that Shakir is, you can change the words because it's your mouth, but clearly more valuable than Cook?
I think he probably makes a bunch of points that make it sound like he hasn't watched football since the 80s.
18 touchdowns.
How many would Ray Davis have scored if he were on the field in Cook's place?
Okay. Can I'm going to keep being running back guy?
Yeah.
Cook guy?
Yeah.
Davis had 6. I think that's 50% more than your guy. As a backup.
It's easier to score rushing touchdowns than it is receiving touchdowns. I don't know.
Is it?
Sure.
Is it?
But it doesn't require a transaction involving the ball being thrown through the air.
Who hasn't watched football? I believe Josh Allen is your quarterback, and it shouldn't be maybe possible, maybe to be expected that you could have more than 4 touchdowns in a season with Allen on the team.
Not if James Cook and Josh Allen themselves are bogarting them all. This is pretty much what happens. I mean, they weren't so good at scoring with James Cook. Maybe they would have thrown it to Shakir a little more in the red zone.
Cook and Davis combined had more receiving touchdowns than Shakir last year. See, this isn't me. I mean, I don't hate this. It's kind of fun. This isn't me because I'm not touchdown guy. I'm never going to be touched. I guess I can't say that. What can I get away with here? When it's Cook scoring 16 rushing touchdowns, I'm like, yeah, fluke. You know, that's not sustainable. We'll have regression for sure.
But you can't wait to tell me that Shakir only had 4.
I can't wait to tell you that Kincaid has only had 4 in his career.
Right.
I don't know. What are we going
to
do with that?
Well, you're going to plead guilty to using different data to support your argument when it's convenient, and that's just how it goes sometimes.
That's terrible.
That's just the way the world works. I mean, you're not unassailable in that department.
That's terrible.
Anyone is.
I'd hate to be accused of that.
Well, shoe fits, whatever.
Tyrell Shavers, almost as many touchdowns.
You're Yeah, in a world where your quarterback is your most important player, the guy he throws the ball to most often is, you know, maybe your next most important guy. And the running back is not, just doesn't challenge that.
I'm gonna drive myself crazy. I'm gonna drive everyone crazy this summer.
Okay.
I will make an effort not to.
I look forward to that.
I will make an effort not to. But like if Cook was an issue, which he maybe still is or maybe never was, right now you got to feel better about it than yesterday.
Sure.
So that's kind of like back burner, if at best, is Cook. What's on the front burner for these guys? Like literally, what is the thing that needs to be fixed?
Beating Kansas City in January.
It's not. It'll be after Christmas.
Wrong answer. Right.
That's the right answer.
But that is the answer. Right. It's just not a convenient one.
There is not. If listen, no offense to Brandon Bean, of course. If wide receiver isn't, you know, worth, if it's not fair, to scrutinize what the decisions they've made at that position, there's nothing more fair. There's nothing – I mean, look, they're still doing it. Shaq Thompson, look at what they have done on defense this offseason. It's free agency. It's the draft. You know, it's everything. They've poured effort into that, and they are going to run it back with almost the same personnel on offense, subbing out Mac Hollins, if you want, Cooper, I guess. I mean, he was on the team for half of it, but for Elijah Moore and whoever else, I don't know who else, a refreshed Curtis Samuel.
Josh Palmer.
Palmer, of course.
New.
Palmer's answer. Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and that is kind of the crux of the whole conversation, right? Like, assets, premium assets, and what are you trying to accomplish? And sure, like, it's not hard to look at the Bills and say, I need to do some work on that defense. I had losses. I haven't supplemented appropriately. I need more. Whatever it is, right? Edge, middle, back end, corner. I need more. Okay, you need more. It is worth pointing out, it's the second time since this championship window opened that they have sort of gone into an offseason operating under that premise. After the 2020 championship game loss, that was Russo and Basham back-to-back, top two picks. Following top pick is A.J. Epenesa right after that. Ed Oliver's in there too. Like, all of these premium assets are being, you know, deployed there, and you know, they've gotten some results, but not good enough that it has avoided them having to, 4 years later, do the same thing, which is what we just did. So, you know, some of us are still over here going, Diggs, full marks. You did it. Look what happened. It worked. Now the league has changed, and offenses has changed because of the way defenses are playing, and there's a lot of things that go into the pot here. So it's not just as simple as, you know, they haven't put enough resources into pass catchers, skill players, to make the offense more explosive and get Josh Allen off. That's maybe harder to do than it was 4 years ago. But I don't know, from 5,000 feet up, they did the same thing this offseason that they did in the 2020 offseason. And, you know, that kept them contending, that kept them at the top of the AFC East. They haven't lost a division since then. They've been in the playoffs. They've won playoff games every year. There's been a certain amount of success, but it has not gotten them there yet. And that's not to say that this round of defense.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radnor, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Defensive reinforcements won't be the thing that gets them over the top. It's just that we've done this already, and it hasn't worked.
It's tough to say hasn't worked, but in that one specific moment, which is kind of what it's all about, it hasn't worked. You know? It's always both. Like, these moves, I always say how if you win a championship, everything you did can be defended. If you traded your best player for your new worst player, but won a championship, okay, like,
it's validated.
It didn't, right? It's validation. Like, you can't really get after anything. Well, they've come pretty close to that. Like, but that's only what it is. It's not the same as winning. They've come pretty close to that. Maybe this will be the year they get their first road playoff win since 1992. Or maybe they won't have to go on the road,
right?
Because they're going into their final game 16-0, and they rest people against the Jets in the last home game in the regular season at their stadium, and
win it anyways.
And win it anyways. That's good. It's better. And then 20-0. Or it's 19-1, and we're in here next year doing the same dance about how whatever they did didn't work. Because they could not get Dak Prescott on the ground in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Like, it's just such a tough bar. But that's how it is. It's fun to talk about, but it's also, like, if I wasn't in the job, I would want to be like, all right, well, You be out there for a while. Right. I'm not worried about anything. Right. You be out there for a while.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And I'll get back to you. I'll get back to you, you know, when we get into the season.
Hey, you mentioned the Jets finale. And if you know this, for our audience, if you were with us, you know, like I was rooting for the Jets to be the final, at least regular season game. You can't control what's going to happen in the playoffs, whether you even be home or not. You hope you are, of course. But final scheduled regular season game in the stadium is the Jets. First ever game in the stadium, regular season game, was the Jets. Do you know that the second regular season game in the stadium was against the Eagles?
No, I didn't. That's good.
A listener pointed this out to me last week or the week before one day, sent me a message.
Tom Dempsey.
And the second to last home game here is going to be. I have no idea. I did not look that far into. I'm a big Synergy guy.
You are.
So I don't know if that like dots the same I and crosses the same T. Like if the Bills wanted that or someone wanted that.
No way.
But the Jets. It's believable to me that you'd want the last game to be the same as the first game. To go so far to say the second game be the same as the second to last game is a bit much. But as it turns out, that's what happened.
Who's my third to last game?
Right. I haven't looked. I haven't gotten any notifications
about
it.
Who is that?
I don't know. Oh, who's
Bengals?
The Bills?
Bengals.
Yeah, that's right. Bengals is the home game before that.
The Bengals were their fifth ever.
Right, they did play him in 73. I was there. Yeah.
Philadelphia's Tom Dempsey missing a field goal at the end, just like the first Bills game I ever went to when he was the Bills kicker.
All right.
1979. All right, no way is that a thing that happened. No way is that a thing that people cared about. You do have a Wallace Francis kickoff return touchdown in that Eagles game. And isn't the story that he did that in the first preseason game?
I've always known it was a 103-yard return against the Eagles. I felt like that was the preseason game, but now that doesn't make sense.
It was a regular season game. It's right. The first touchdown they scored in the stadium because they did not score a touchdown in the Jet game.
So I don't know then if he had one in the preseason that year too. I don't remember, but okay. I remember. I still have a scrapbook with pictures of him catching that ball just inside the Bills' goal line.
They kicked a 12-yard field goal in this game. Those were the days. Oh, I love a 12-yard field goal. 803-0550. James Cook is in. What does it matter to you? Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.
We all agree Trey will be right? But technically he's still 1% wrong for being under contract. In my case, I'm 100% right. So it should be a no-brainer. Trey's case, I think it should be a no-brainer too. I mean, he led 17 and a half sacks 2 years back-to-back. If I was the GM or I was the owner, take all my money. But I guess they don't operate like that.
See what I mean? See what life is like across the other side of the fence? Cincinnati, not even like the Jets. Cincinnati, pretty good. Shamar Stewart, draft pick this year. They can't get a deal done. He's there basically calling them on it. I mean, he's absolutely doing that.
Right. Isn't the story there like every other first-round rookie contract has the kind of language they're trying to get in it, and the Bengals are saying no. The Bengals, man. Like I got to give them – they've kept it together better than I thought they would, but they managed to always still have some kind of something, you know. The Hendrickson thing, you know, the market cornered on that. They've got a veteran pass rusher who they might rightly be afraid about rewarding for great seasons that he's just completed. And going forward, like, is this really going to be a good investment? Maybe Pittsburgh's thinking the same thing about T.J. Watt, and I can understand that. Here's a rookie that it seems like it's paint by numbers. just try to stay in the lines, okay? The code is going to tell you what color to use for this guy's shoes. Just paint it. What are you doing? Bengals? You always find a way to step in it.
Stewart said, quote, or they, quote, just want to win arguments more than winning games.
Guy isn't even suited up yet.
I know. What a sad thing.
That is so tough.
I'm like the Bengals in that way. I just want to win the argument, really. I just wanted James Cook to hold out. So we could talk about it and ask each other every day whether it was worth it for him to do that.
Yeah.
Whether the Bills really need him and all these things. I just want to have the my fun. It's still, I keep saying it's May. It's not May anymore. It's actually June.
Yeah.
But still.
It's barely even early June. I mean, it's the double digits. It's Father's Day this weekend.
Yes.
I know how time works and how the calendar works. It just seems early. I wasn't ready for the U.S. Open this weekend, Father's Day. Like, that is just...
It's the earliest it could be.
Okay.
Because the first was on a Sunday.
Right.
Just, it's the third Sunday in June.
All right. I feel validated then. Yes. Feeling freaked
and
out.
And it's still already. 5 more days from now. So it's not like tomorrow or something.
No, but still, yeah.
You have a little time.
Yeah.
You have a little time.
That's all right. I don't need to really get anything together for it. I mean, make an appetizer. We'll have a party at my sister's house.
I will be in Ohio, not at a party at my sister's house. There may be a party at my sister's house, but I will not be present if there is, driving from Ohio. I'll be watching my son's lacrosse tonight. There's not much else to watch tonight. There's baseball.
Right.
Maybe the WNBA.
We're at that time where, yeah, I mean, obviously we got to the championship rounds here, but yeah, no basketball, no hockey. The off night for both. The basketball goes tomorrow, and then the hockey will go on Thursday again with game 4.
We'll see if I find a baseball game that the announcers are not at, like last night. How do you feel? Apologies if you said. I was pretty worked up. I got worked up about this last night watching a Pirates game. MLB Network is carrying the game. Their announcers are not there. And I doubt they ever said it. I didn't watch the whole game and listen to every word. But they never disclosed that at the beginning. I was watching it when it started. And I heard the guy say he was working with Tom Verducci. And I looked at the screen. And you always see the announcers in the booth at the beginning of the broadcast.
Scene setter. Yeah, right.
But there was not that. And every time they would come back from commercial, they would still also not show the booth. So, as I mentioned to you earlier, I texted Andrew Filipponi, like, do you know? Like, are these guys not there? He's like, they're not here. And, you know, make your jokes about how it's the Pirates and nobody's there. But I think they're playing with the sound. They're doing things that are, it's more and more, I guess, acceptable to not have announcers in the stadium. I mean, they can't afford it. MLB, to not have announcers right in the stadium makes you think, well, they'll do whatever they want with the sound. Like, that stuff used to be taken really seriously, even in the arena, in the stadium, piped in
right,
sound.
Right, right, right.
That used to be a scandal. I bet they all do it now.
Oh, I don't think I doubted that they were doing it then, even. But now, for sure, yeah. Yeah, everything is so much easier to manipulate now.
We were in the press box for one of those many Bills games 7 or 8 years ago, and there was like a din. There was a sound because some of the crowd noise is on speaker in the press box, but not all of it. Like, it's quieter, but you can tell that something is turned up. And I was just drawn to it. It sounded like it was maybe a tape. And I never found out that it was. I even asked a couple people with the Bills, like, what is that crowd noise? And somebody said, like, oh, they must be right near the microphone. The microphone must be near. I don't know. It didn't make sense to me. And so last night, there are 2,000 people at the Pirates game, something like that. And I tweeted it. There was a check swing. And the fans booing the third base umpire who did not call it in the Pirates' way. The booing was like, it's a 50,000-seat World Series game at Yankee Stadium.
Right, right. There's no way the number of people at that game were able to make that sound.
If I'm at a Pirates game, and I'm a Pirates fan, like my age and everything, I'm at that game last night, and it's the second inning, and I don't get a check swing call, you might look at me reacting to that and wonder if I'm dead.
Right.
I'm not booing. I'm not crazy. Like, how crazy would you have to be to boo that? Yet on the broadcast, it sounded like it was everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, see, that would bother me more than the announcers not being there. And I don't. I definitely am not a fan of that. I mean, I got crazy about the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you're not sending crews to Canada. Like, what are you doing? This is the playoffs. This isn't just like a preseason game. What during the regular season? I know at times the NHL Network has like a Saturday broadcast, and it's EJ Raddick and Kevin Weeks. And they're in a studio in New Jersey or somewhere, or wherever their NHL Network studios are. And that they do show them sitting in the studio. So you know, you turn that game on when it's supposed to start, and whatever amount of run up they give it, you know they're not there because they're showing them sitting at a desk in a studio, and then they start doing the game. At times they also do that with a crew hosting the studio show, and then they just throw it to the local whatever. The local broadcast of the game, and then go back for their lousy studio intermission, which is usually way worse than even what the local broadcast would be doing. But that's a different point. I mostly want to know. And because the expectation is, of course, they're there. They're going to see things that we're not. And that's part of the value in being there. Whether that's the referee trailing the play that's not on the screen, has his hand up, and we can't see the goalie leaving the net. Well, guess what? If you're not there and you're doing the game off of a monitor, which I'm also watching, you don't see the referee behind the play with his arm up, nor the goalie leaving the net. And it's happened where I've been watching a game and that's how it gets exposed. It's like, oh. Then they must not be there. I can tell by the way that all just went down. They didn't know there was a delayed penalty. And it barely affects how I enjoy watching the game, but it offends me anyways.
I want them to tell us.
Right. That's it. That's all it is. If you can't devote the resources to get these people there, all right,
which is laughable,
right?
Anyway,
all right, you made your decision, whatever. But just try not to present it to me because you're taking me for granted that I'm not going to notice. And as soon as I do, now I've got you, and now I'm mad. And it's not going to make me change the channel, but don't have some respect for the people watching your game that they're going to notice.
That's right, and care, It sounds when I say it, especially on the air, I feel like I'm just so paranoid or something. But so every day there are new examples of, oh, this is actually fake. We thought it was bad 5 years ago or something. The whole fake news nonsense. But now, like, guys I know in fantasy football that I've known of before I even started playing seriously, were let go by Yahoo. And then today, Yahoo's got like 5 articles that are all computer written. Like they're now I'm supposed to take advice on whether to draft Jameson Williams from a bot. I might not know that it's a bot.
Right.
Right? When the Sabres and the NHL started to put ads on the boards, which now, are we taking that for granted now? I mean, that's what you get every game, that aren't really there. It just like offended me, and I'm like, why wouldn't the Sabres pretend images of people in the seats? Like, why wouldn't they just do that? Is that going too far? Like, what? Why wouldn't they just make the crowd look like, if there's I don't know, it wouldn't apply to the NHL, I suppose, but imagine like if the upper deck is empty, they don't show it. Because they don't want you to see that the upper deck is empty. Say maybe for a baseball game or something like that. That would be a thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to show you where the seats are empty. Why don't I just now, because I have the technology, why don't I just put people in the seats? I mean, that doesn't feel like it's too far away. And I think in the same way, somebody would go, what's the problem? Somebody would say that about all these things.
Right.
What's the problem?
Why does it bother you?
Why do I need Tom Verducci at PNC Park? He's watching the game on TV and giving you his insight. Why do I need him there? I don't know. But it just feels wrong. Like, tell me at least that you're not there. Because then when you miss something, and I haven't caught somehow because it's hard to tell.
Right.
It didn't used to be.
Well,
the Olympics, the Olympics would be in South Korea. And all the little the minor sports, those broadcasters are not in South Korea. They're in New York. Right? I mean, doing the fencing commentary and that. That was a long time ago, and that's probably still the case. Maybe it was easier to tell, or more just common sense to think that.
It really, you know, I'm now thinking, and I don't know if this helps the conversation, but an observation. I just thought of this. I'm thinking about how I watch often, and this is not the case with a Stanley Cup final game or like, you know, a big game. But like if it's one of 82 or one of 162 in baseball, I am almost definitely not paying close enough attention that I'm ever going to notice. Often,
yeah.
Because I'm doing something else. I'm reading, whatever. I'm reading about some band I like getting back together, or I'm reading some sort of sports whatever. I'm doing something. I'm on a device. I'm not just staring at the TV intently, waiting to see if Tom Verducci is going to notice this check swing in the umpire in time, right? I guess I'm sort of copping to being guilty of allowing them to get away with this, because they probably get away with way more than I've ever even noticed, because how many of us are just devoted to the thing that's on the TV screen entirely anymore? I mean,
I know, but I want to be rewarded for being
sure.
such a fan that I'm watching the Marlins Pirates game and would like a little respect, right. As you put it.
Just that almost I rarely ever am that tuned into it anymore.
Yeah. You're playing Heyday. You're building your fake farm. You're feeding your chickens. Right. On Heyday, that does really take up your attention. There's always something else to do.
Right.
You got to feed the animals. You got to collect the fruit.
We had a little real wildlife drama at our house today.
I love a wildlife drama.
We got a break after this.
Okay. That's that.
I hope
I'll stay tuned for that.
I'm very hopeful that it has reached a very happy conclusion, but I'm not sure.
Uh-oh. I might have to leave.
All right. I was trying to do an effective tease there.
Well, I think it was. I think we'll find out in the numbers in the R&D tomorrow. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR. James Cook showed up, mandatory minicamp. He took that literally. Sounds like it's mandatory that I should be there. Speaking of, is he or are they there? Wildlife at Bulldog's house.
I found out this morning when I let Fred out. I'd noticed, I guess previously, I'd noticed it again today, an adult rabbit, like very near the back door. There are often rabbits in the backyard, and Fred, you know, they'll be there. Sometimes they're in the right spot in the garden. They'll just stand there, like maybe nobody sees me,
yep.
And Fred won't even notice. He'll just go do his business, sniffing around, peeing and pooping, and then comes in, and the rabbit is just still standing there like a chocolate bunny. Like, Fred, there's a rat. Anyway, but usually the rabbit, the back door opens, a rabbit scurries from somewhere in the yard under the fence or into the garage and out under the garage.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
Whatever, they get away. But the last few times I've been letting Fred out, you know, in the evening or early in the morning, there's a rabbit kind of close to the – it still runs away and gets away. Fred, you know, doesn't have the foot speed to catch a rabbit that's got a head start on him. But today I noticed after this rabbit scurried away, I'm standing out there in the backyard, kind of right near the door, stretching or whatever I might do while Fred is doing his business. And I noticed in a pot that's been sitting there, like a big potted plant pot, like but very big, like for maybe like an arborvitae tree or something. This big pot that's just kind of full of dirt. We're not doing anything with it. I don't even know why it's still there, but it's there. I look, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's bunnies. There's two, at least two that I can see. There's a nest in there. And two little bunny heads.
Like, little bunny heads.
Little bunny heads. I'm like, we got bunnies. Oh, my gosh. Mm. Fred never, I think maybe the air conditioning unit is right there, and that freaks him out. He never goes over there. He never smells around there. I was not worried that he's going to find these bunnies. But all the same, I just thought, like, I better let everybody know, hey, there's a nest there. Don't mess around. You know, I Googled 3 or 4 weeks. It'll, you know, run its course. They'll get out of there. Okay. I go back outside at 1:15 before I came here. The bunnies were gone. Mm. And I thought, like, oh, well.
They grew up so fast.
I know, right? It's just like, you just, wow, 1 minute they're there. And then it's like, well, I sure hope that this just happened. I'm thinking, oh, I just happened to notice them on the day that they were going to get sprung. They're going to hop out of there and just go on their bunny way. I text my wife. I'm like, hey, just so you know, the bunnies weren't there this afternoon when I looked again. And she texts back, oh, well, I sure hope a hawk didn't get them.
Could have been a hawk.
I mean, it's certainly conceivable, but it's just not a spot that I would expect. It's at the middle of a field or anything. They're in a pot close to my house. I'd be surprised if that happened, but I guess it's possible. But I hope the bunnies are okay.
Well, this story tells me that I don't have all the bunnies. Because I kind of thought I had all the bunnies.
Yeah.
In planters, even?
Yeah, right. That's what this kind of was. Yeah.
We have bushes that are, I think, dead from the bunnies that live, bunnies, I got to stop saying, the rabbits that live under the deck that I think have just been eating off of these things all winter.
Hmm.
And there are usually, like, there are often rabbits.
Many.
Around, yeah. All around. I mean, it's got to be a lot of them at this point.
Yeah.
And they're taking out our stuff.
I do hear that they multiply.
Yes, they have that reputation. And my dog would chase after them, but probably lose. Yeah. She's fast.
Yeah.
She might not be rabbit fast.
I'm always rooting for Fred to lose because I don't want to see what would happen if he actually caught a rabbit.
We wouldn't put Margo, who was probably 10 pounds at the time, on a leash in the backyard before the trees grew in
because of fox. Yeah, right.
Because we have a lot of those.
Yeah.
You know, it's bucolic where I am. Yeah. It's so rural.
Yeah.
No, it's just enough land to bring on, you know, rabbits and hawks.
I did tell my wife, like, I'm obviously eagles. No expert in this field, but the nest area that I saw the bunnies in this morning did not look as though it was that disturbed. And, right. And like, I'm imagining a hawk swooping down there and you know, grabbing them out of there somewhat violently.
Okay.
Would have left more of a sign of a struggle, I guess. In my mind, the rabbits, I saw them right at the end, and they're out there in the rabbit world. I hope.
See, this could be the movie we were talking about before, but if it's the James Cook movie, the rabbits are just back and they've built a little house. And
right, I'm going to get home tonight and they're there. Right.
There'll be doors. It'll be all just fine. 803-0550, James Cook in for mandatory minicamp. His value to the Bills, we've been talking about it a lot lately. Today takes some of the edge off. All of it? I don't know. You tell us. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.